Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. And folks, it is the start of the 2026 PGA Tour season. We've made it. It gets underway on Thursday with the Sony Open in Hawaii. But Rex, as has been the case for a lot of weeks since 2022, we have to first start with all the action off of the golf course and the continued reaction, not necessarily the blowback, but the reaction to the Brooks Koepka news that was announced on Monday. If you somehow missed it, Brooks Koepka, five-time major champion, is back on the PGA Tour under what the tour is calling a returning member program. You'll see him in a couple of weeks first at Torrey Pines. I'll see him the following week at Phoenix. What have you been hearing from folks in the industry and players as it relates to this news?
I mean, it's two sides of the coin, right? You're talking about what we're hearing from the PGA Tour side and then what we're hearing from the LIV Golf side. I'll start with the PGA Tour side because, and this kind of unfolded on Monday, you and I both spent a lot of time talking about it when the news broke. By and large, I think most PGA Tour players are supportive of this. As I think I said on Monday, this is a really elegant solution to a really complicated problem. It was always going to be curious how Brian Rolup and the PGA Tour was going to walk that fine line. And what they had to do, they had to figure out a way to make it penal enough for these players to come back. They did violate the tour policy. Some of them sued the PGA Tour. Like, there had to be some sort of punishment for this. But you couldn't make it so penal that it was cost prohibitive, essentially. That if you told Brooks Koepka, it's not only is it going to cost you millions and millions of dollars, which this essentially will do, but it's also going to cost you a year or two of your career. You can't come back until 2027 or 2028. That was sort of the conversation all along. I found it fascinating. Tiger Woods spoke during the TGL match on Tuesday night about this, and he obviously was involved in this. He's the chairman of the Future Competitions Committee. He's on the policy board. The one part that stood out that he said is they had been working on this for weeks. They didn't wait essentially till December 23rd. That's when,
quote, no days off, Tiger said.
No days off. And I don't think Tiger takes days off, essentially, when it comes to what he's doing now with the PGA Tour, based on what I've been told. But that was fascinating to me because it goes back to what we talked a lot about on Monday, which you and I have sort of touched on in the last few days. We knew this was coming for a long time, not just weeks, not just months, probably years, that Brooks was going to be the one that walked through the gate. And what was the pathway going to look like? So on that front, there's going to be some player pushback. But if you look at it from 30,000 feet, which I think most players I talk to, seem like most players you talk to, did that, it's not going to take anything away from anyone. Actually, he's going to add to fields. They're not going to collapse fields because of him. If it's a 120-player field and they have to add him, not only does it go to 121, but if they want threesomes, it's going to go to 123 because you have to have a threesome to account for that. So there's going to be players who actually benefit from this. He's not going to take anything away from anyone at the end of the season on the FedEx Cup points list. Everything they did was to appease the membership and to prove that we're doing this punishment, and also to make the pathway back welcoming enough for Brooks. On the LIV side, they actually had their media event the last few days in South Florida. It was interesting to hear the other three players. And look, this was geared towards four very specific players with a very specific window. They wanted John Rahm, they wanted Cam Smith, they wanted Bryson DeChambeau. All three of them said this week down at the LIV media event that they were staying loyal to LIV Golf. That's at least in the short term. And again, this is a small window. This window's only open until February 2nd for them to take this. So there is a time element to this. But as of right now, I think the dominoes that the tour hoped would fall aren't, but that doesn't mean they won't.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a second. I've got the clips because I feel like it was a situation where the transcripts didn't necessarily do justice to what the audio and the visual actually was.
You have the Cam Smith clip? I can't wait. I want to see this. I want to see the clip.
Where he was sitting outside like the Bonefish Grill pledging his fealty to the PGA Tour. I do not have the Cam Smith one. I do have the Bryson DeChambeau and the John Rahm. We're going to play that for you in just a second. Just to go back to what you were saying, Rex, about the PGA Tour and the move and how it's sort of fallen along party lines, right? Like, they hear from the stars, where it's a Tiger Woods, a Roy McIlroy, a Scottie Scheffler popped in with Colt Knost and said that this is a great move for the PGA Tour. And then you had George Savarikas reporting, who was on the ground at the Sony Open, saying some players didn't want to go on camera because they were a little bit miffed or they're a little bit annoyed at the PGA Tour, which has said one thing over the past 3 or 4 years, then turned around and in a matter of days, if not weeks.
turned around and did essentially the opposite. What has been clear from a 30,000 foot view is the PGA Tour is pretty expeditiously getting away from tradition and heritage and fairness for all and doing what is best for the business. And that is the definition of modernizing the product. And I can't help but think what would have happened if Jay Monahan was still leading the PGA Tour in his official capacity as PGA Tour commissioner. Brian Rolapp has the authority. He has the directness. He has the pedigree. He has the autonomy to make this sort of move. And he did so in a matter of days. Brian Rolapp, if it's to be believed that Brooks Koepka on Friday reapplied for PGA Tour membership, as was reported by you, among others, on Monday, it was announced this new program. And so Brian Rolapp was able to do in, what is that, 3 or 4 days, what Jay Monahan could not do over the course of a couple of years. And so he's answering the question from a business perspective, will Brooks Koepka being back on tour help us right now? The answer, Rex, is an overwhelming yes. Like, Brooks Koepka is still a name. He still has value. He still has pedigree. He still has popularity. He still sort of overflows with controversy no matter what he is doing. So when you're operating from that assumption, how do you do it? You and I both talked. I thought this was a masterstroke. You're making Brooks Koepka earn it. He's not getting the signature events unless he qualifies on his own. No spots are lost. No status is lost. He's not getting equity for the next 5 years. Like, all of the sort of tangential elements of this deal were done to perfection. And Brian Rolapp, with help from others, Brian Rolapp has the final say. Brian Rolapp was able to get it done in a very quick timeline.
And that's a really good point. I will circle back around and say that this doesn't get done if Jay Monahan is still the CEO. There's too much baggage there. There's too much water under the bridge.
The Zoom calls and the subcommittees and it would take months.
Not only that, I think there would have been enough self-awareness to know that the guy who sat in the booth at the Canadian Open just a few years ago and made the comment that no PGA Tour player has had to apologize for the tour he plays for, I think that would have echoed. I think there would have been way too much player backlash on both sides, LIV Golf and the PGA Tour. And as I pointed out, this essentially came together in days, but I think they've been trying to come up with a way. They've been trying to come up with this solution for a long time, ever since the rumors started to spark that Brooks wanted to come back. So, yes, I give Brian Rolapp all the credit in the world, because you're absolutely right. He has probably the most important thing. He has the mandate. Like, you can sit and come up with the ideas, and you can kick things around and try to get Tiger Woods and everyone else to sign off on it. But the one thing Brian had that Jay Monahan probably would not have had in this situation is the mandate from the players that, yes, this is something that has to happen.
I mean, he's playing offense, where I think for the past 4 or 5 years, the PGA Tour could be criticized as playing defense occasionally pretty poorly.
I will say, and you and I had, we had a pre-pod meeting. We have those things. I know you guys don't believe it, but we actually have those things.
Sometimes,
there was a conversation on Monday late in the afternoon between just some folks internally at the golf.
Do not name names.
Not going to name names. But one of those people felt like this was a body blow, a possible debilitating body blow for LIV Golf. And
Shot to the kidneys.
I pushed back a little bit, and here's why. As I pointed out, and everyone seems to know, we knew this was coming for a long time. Brooks was disgruntled almost really from the second he went over to LIV Golf. So this was always going to be a possibility. It's a blow. Trust me, this gives the tour leverage for the first time in a really long time, and whatever the ongoing conversation is between the two sides. A true body blow would have been if one of the other three players, we're talking about Jon Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, and Cam Smith, if they decided to jump ship. And I don't think LIV Golf is giving up on those three as easily as they gave up on Brooks. According to one source I spoke to at LIV Golf, essentially the conversation between Brooks and the governor of the Public Investment Fund was, if you're not happy, we don't want you here, with one year left on his contract. So that was a pretty easy conversation for Brooks to walk away from. I don't think it's going to be that easy of a conversation for Jon Rahm or Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah, let's transition here, because you're right. This returning member program does apply to three players and three players only. Those are the only players who have been away from the PGA Tour for at least 2 years. The only players who have won a players championship or a major championship since 2022. That was explicitly outlined. And Rex, everyone was like pointing to oh, this is another move by Tiger Woods to keep Phil Mickelson out of it. Phil Mickelson won a major championship in 2021. He should have been roped in as well. LIV started in 2022. Like, why are we all of a sudden extending it to 2021 or 2020 if you wanted to get Dustin Johnson back in the mix as well? Like, it's pretty obvious that LIV started in June 2022. That is when this returning members program should get back. That's why I didn't quite understand the conspiracy theory as it relates to that one.
And it was our friend who Eamon Lynch who came up with that conspiracy theory. So good for him. I'm sort of with you on that front. And I will say, you said not to name names, but that one was on air. I think everyone heard him say that. Well, it's funny that it's not 2021. And I'll also say that I didn't understand the concept of a la carte when it came to this issue for a very long time. It seemed to me that everyone had to be treated the same way, because as someone who's probably spent way too much time in courtrooms and going through court filings, I could only imagine this becoming a very sticky legal issue if you start picking and choosing exactly which players you want. But that's exactly what the PGA Tour has done. And again, elegant solution, because they've done it in such a way that even the players on LIV, and I've spoken with a couple of the players over there that don't fall in to this sort of golden category of having won a major at a player since 2022, even they can acknowledge that, yep, that's the way it probably should have started. That if you weren't part of the lawsuit and you're a major winner since you went over and all of the other things that factor into this thing, that, yeah, that seems like the perfect way to do this.
All right, so let's start with Cam Smith, who you might recall in 2022 had a breakout year, won the Players' Championship in dramatic fashion, won the Open Championship in dramatic fashion, and then left following the FedEx Cup playoffs. He sounded perfectly happy on LIV, and I really like Cam. I find him to be a lovely bloke. He said he's
surprised that he had been
named LIV
specifically in the policy. Yes. I'm genuinely shocked. Like, surprised. My name is in
me?
It? They said my name?
But he said he has no intention of going anywhere. He likes all the time now that he gets to spend in Australia, having a robust PGA Tour schedule where he's playing almost every single week during the heart of the golf season. Did not sound like it appealed too much to him. The other two players, I would argue, are of more interest to the PGA Tour anyway, with Jon Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau. Bryson has been in the news over the past couple of weeks because he acknowledges, especially after Brooks Koepka bolted for the PGA Tour, that he has boatloads of leverage now. He too, just like Brooks, is entering the final year of his contract, arguably the biggest star in the sport, especially when you look at what he's doing on his YouTube and social front. Here is what Bryson DeChambeau had to say when asked about the returning member program and sort of his plans for 2026.
I'm contracted through 2026, so excited about this year.
All right.
I love the moderator. All right.
let's
just move on. That is not too dissimilar, Rex, from what Bryson said in a podcast a couple of weeks ago, where he understands that this is a very unique situation where you really have free agency coming to professional golf. And he seems pretty interested in utilizing that. Jon Rahm, who was also sitting on that stage, was asked about his intentions as well for 2026. Here's what he had to say.
And as far as I'm concerned, I'm focused on the league, on my team this year, and hopefully we can repeat as champions again. Yeah, man, I'm not planning on going anywhere. So, very similar answer to what Bryson gave.
Not planning on going anywhere. Bryson contracted through 2026. Those, Rex, were, I think, prime examples of the transcript not really doing justice to what the audio and the visual elements were. What was your reaction when you either read or you saw that?
I think first and foremost, you have to look at what, of course, they're going to say. They're at a LIV Golf media event, you know, to get ready for the start of the season. So I'm not quite sure what else you expected. I just texted you the social media post from Bryson DeChambeau, which is sort of on the other side of this. They said what they needed to say in that particular setting. And again, I don't know that there's going to be the open door for these players like it was for Brooks. Brooks, it seems to me the negotiations between the public investment fund and Brooks to get out of that last year was pretty clear cut, pretty easy. I don't think it's going to be nearly that easy. Certainly not for John Rahm, and I wouldn't imagine for Bryson DeChambeau. That's the picture, though, that Bryson put on social media. Here, put it back up again. And look, this is his cute way of sort of trying to make headlines, I guess. But is he talking about leaving to go back to the PGA Tour? Is he going to try a new type of creatine? Like, I'm not quite sure what he's getting at there, but
that's the fun, Rex. That's part of the viral trend. He was jumping on a viral trend, and now he wants to keep people guessing. See, it's fun.
And to his brand, I'm very impressed with the way he's been able to do this. And you're absolutely right. I mean, if anyone has an enormous amount of leverage right now, it's going to be Bryson DeChambeau, because if LIV Golf lets him walk away, he's not the best player on the planet, but he is by far the most popular player on that tour. He's the one that could possibly make them relevant in the United States. They've had success overseas. If you want to break through more in the United States, it's going to be really based on what Bryson DeChambeau is able to do in the future. We all saw what happened when he won the U.S. Open at Pinehurst, beat Rory. It turned into a phenomenon for a few weeks. And I think that's what they need if they're going to continue to build momentum in the United States. But he's going to be in a position where he probably wants another nine-figure payday. And I don't know that LIV Golf, by all accounts, they don't give those out anymore. So it will be interesting negotiations.
Yeah, look, the quote that I'm contracted through 2026, so I'm excited about this year. If you step back, almost every player who is in this position, on my Jags, let's say on your Orioles, they talk like this entering the final year of a contract. Mm-hmm. That's because it's a negotiating ploy. Bryson DeChambeau has leverage, just like a player in the NFL or Major League Baseball might have leverage if they are a big star and they have the owner, the GM, essentially in a headlock. They want to utilize the leverage that they do have. And I would anticipate Bryson DeChambeau giving a very similar answer for the entirety of the season and stringing out this will he or won't he decision. Why? It's a good business move. He knows that he has the power here, and he intends to use it. Rex, do you actually believe Bryson DeChambeau when he says that he could leave LIV, he doesn't necessarily need the PGA Tour, and he could just be a YouTube golfer? He says it's very profitable. I don't think there's any reason to discount that assumption or that assertion as well. But could you foresee a scenario in which he just does YouTube stuff and then reappears the major championships if somehow these negotiations sort of fall apart?
I don't think anything Bryson DeChambeau would do would surprise me. However, on this front, I don't know if it would play out the way he thinks, only because he can say he just wants to be a YouTube golfer and he can play the four majors and really spend his time creating content. And he's really good at creating content. I'm not taking anything away from him, but a player, and Bryson is wired differently, but a player like Bryson DeChambeau, when you reach that level, it's the competition that drives you. He's not doing anything for paydays anymore. I'm not even quite sure he's doing anything for trophies anymore. This is all about the competition. Tiger Woods has talked about this a lot over the course of his career, getting out and getting in the mix and seeing exactly if you can pull off the shots when you need to, coming down the stretch when the pressure is the most. You're not going to have that if you're a quote-unquote YouTube golfer. So I know where he's coming from, and it is an entertaining concept to me, but I don't think he or any other PGA Tour player at that level is really wired that way.
That's why I think he's so different, and I wrote about a little bit in 2025, the other stuff that he does, this like Quartz record series that he has, the Breaking 50 series that he has. I do think there are some elements of that that can actually help him situationally in tournament golf, but just relying on that sort of mentality, that sort of mindset, that sort of skill set, there's no way that that can translate fully to major championship golf and the most pressure and the stress. He's using those series more for situational focus. He's using for how to sort of channel the adrenaline that he experiences when he's getting close to the end goal. Like, I can see how that could help you at certain points of a major championship, but you also need a scorecard in your hand. You might not need to play 25 events, but I think having at least a schedule of 6 to 8 events makes a lot of sense. And keep in mind, look, he does things differently than basically everyone else on the PGA Tour or the LIV circuit. He almost never plays golf. He practices. He practices golf because he is trying to train a motion. He is trying to train a swing pattern. You have a Scottie Scheffler, or you have all the guys in South Florida. They love to play. They love to get out on the golf course and recreate shots and get in money matches, and that's how they fuel their competitive fire. Bryson has always been wired differently, where he does not like to do that at all. He just likes to grind on the range. That is what gives him confidence, not necessarily what he does between the ropes or even at home in practice. Another element of this, Rex, is the time element, right? LIV season starts on February 4th. If you look at the fine print for the returning member program, it says February 2nd. Do you believe Brian Rolapp's message that this is a one-time offer and that is what is offered right now might not be offered in the future?
Yeah. I mean, and you said it just the way it was written, that this is not, it might not be there in the future. I think that's an absolutely fair way of saying it. He's not saying it's not going to be there in the future. This is not Godfather. It's that this isn't a one-time deal. Take it or leave it now. I mean, no, I don't think they're doing that at all. You lose a little bit of that leverage we talked about. However, if we get to February 2nd and then suddenly on February 3rd, John Rahm calls and said, you know what? I changed my mind. I want to come back. And suddenly you're changing the policy. Now you look like the sky is falling. So you need to be a little bit more realistic about this. But I think they took a view with these specific four players that they feel like this is a window they can take advantage of. I'm a fan of how he was able to do this because it's a very savvy move. It's forcing these three players remaining on this list to make a decision before the season starts. And if you're going to commit, then go ahead and commit. Maybe we circle back around next year when Bryson's at the end of his contract, John Rahm's closer to the end of his contract. But yeah, I believe for now, at least in the short term, that's it.
Yep. I think it's another example of them playing offense, and it may not work out. Right. I think it's very likely that none of these three players are going to make the jump before February 2nd and they play on LIV for at least 2026 and the PGA Tour goes their separate ways. But why it was such a masterful chess move by Brian Rolapp is that it heaps all of the pressure back on, I would say most specifically, John Rahm. And he now has to tell fans, essentially, I've got a contract. It's going to pay me hundreds of millions of dollars. And even though I've already earned more money than I could possibly spend in 10 lifetimes, I want more, and the competition doesn't really matter to me. That's what John Rahm, fair or not, is saying by not giving up his LIV contract and going right now to the PGA Tour. That's genius. That is a brilliant move if you're a Brian Rolapp in the PGA Tour. They're giving him an exit ramp, and at least subliminally, John Rahm is saying, I'm fine still cruising at 25 miles an hour on the highway, and that's how I want to go about business. From a public perspective, from a PR perspective, that is a really tough thing for John Rahm and his fans to stomach. All right. How about, Rex, the meaningful golf that we're going to be talking about this week? It's been like 2 months. I am itching for some actual consequential golf, for tournament winners, for full fields, for FedEx Cup points. Like, I'm finally ready to dive back in to all of it. Rory McIlroy, Tommy Fleetwood not in the field this week at the Sony Open. Actually, they're playing on the DP World Tour at the Dubai Invitational. They sparred off, remember, last year, which actually kickstarted a great year for both of those players. But if you look, Rex, at the PGA Tour and the Sony Open, 20 of the top 50 players in the world are teeing it up this week. What's caught your eye?
You're hungry. You want golf. What does scarcity feel like? Let Brian Rolapp know. Tell him exactly what scarcity feels like. This is it. This is what it looks like. What does it feel like?
It feels desperate. It feels like I've missed the consequential PGA Tour. Could they have strung this out for another month? Yes. I can only imagine the hunger. I would be insatiable, Rex. I'd be consuming every TGL match. I'd be up at all hours of the day watching DP World Tour coverage. But yes, I'm very excited to have the PGA Tour back in my life.
No, I'm with you as well. And look, I missed Maui. We talked a little about this on the podcast the other day. I love starting the season in Maui. There's a lot about it that's unique. And I think if you're on the East Coast and you're freezing to death and you're looking at those images of that beautiful island, I think there's a lot of reasons to get excited about it. I think that will be missed. But when you look at the Sony Open, I think this event has been around for so long. Everyone, there's a handful of courses. We talk about this all the time. Iconic golf courses going forward. The scarcity model is going to lean into major markets and iconic courses. I would say that the Sony Open is an iconic course. You can sit and kind of go through the holes, and it's fun to sort of remember all the great shots that have been hit from time to time. I am impressed with the field. As you pointed out, 20 out of the top 50. Jordan Spieth is in the field. Colin Morikawa. You can keep going on and on. I think no one knew exactly what to expect without Maui. Without starting the season in Hawaii with a signature event, how many players were actually going to make the trip over? I think this is a good sign for the Sony Open, but as our friend Mark Rolfing has pointed out recently in the press, that the Hawaiian swing is in trouble, and they need something special to happen. And a good week this week, and with a good winner, a Jordan Spieth, a Colin Morikawa, someone along those lines can only help.
Do you think that that will be enough to salvage the Hawaiian swing, or are Brian Rolap and his overlords at SSG just determined to rid the PGA Tour schedule of that, to start it a month later, to only go to venues and markets that make sense on a spreadsheet?
Well, first and foremost, I'm not quite sure. There's a lot of speculation right now that the Hawaiian swing is going to be the low-hanging fruit. And I think you can make a good argument. You and I have touched on it. The idea that it's really expensive to pack up the circus and send it all the way across the Pacific to have these 2 weeks in Hawaii. I think there's also the idea that these aren't major markets. And the tour and the folks who are making these decisions have been very clear. They want to be in more major markets going forward. That's the whole idea behind this future competitions committee. So that's two pretty big strikes against it. You're also losing sponsors. This is the last year for Sony, certainly whatever's going on with Century this year because of the drought and the tragedy that went into it isn't helping the situation either. That's three really big strikes to start. And if you're in that room with Tiger Woods as the chair of the Future Competitions Committee and you have the blank piece of paper and it's set for you, the first things you're going to do is start picking off the easy ones. And I apologize to Mark Rolfing, our colleague, is going to work hard to try to save the Hawaiian swing, but that is the low-hanging fruit right now.
Yeah, you know, it's just one of those situations where, again, the heritage, the tradition, the nostalgia, the good vibes that some of these tournaments, some of these venues, the spot in the schedule engenders. You know, I think hardcore golf fans are probably going to miss it in 5 years if it gets lopped off. Will it just be like do you remember when the tour used to start in Hawaii? Or, you know, do they create such a appealing, compelling product for PGA Tour fans, that's just sort of a necessary evil to get rid of it, the cost of doing business. I think that's certainly a possibility as well. As it relates to this week, you and I have spent a lot of time over the past couple of months because, again, we do not have consequential, meaningful golf to talk about. You know, what's Scotty going to do in 2026? What's Rory McIlroy going to do for an encore? Who can challenge Scottie Scheffler and his reign of dominance? This week, we're actually going to start to get some answers toward that. And one of the things that I'm always excited to see at the beginning of a new year is who is going to step up and emerge. I don't think any of us would have had JJ Spahn or Ben Griffin or Andrew Novak on our short list of contenders for guys who are going to make a jump. But when you look at what happened in 2025, it was a close call for JJ Spahn at the Sony that sort of led him to believe that something really cool was possible. Maybe he didn't know that it was going to lead necessarily to a loss in the Players' Championship and an eventual victory at the U.S. Open, but you can start to have some building blocks even in what is a pretty low-key tournament like the Sony Open. And so who is going to take the step? Is it going to be, you know, Russell Henley, who sort of would be a J.J. Spahn type character who maybe gets into the winner's circle in a major championship this year? Is it going to be Robert McIntyre, who I think is another player poised to take a leap after what he had a pretty successful 2025 as well? And so those are the answers, Rex, that I like to start to get into. Those are the sort of storylines, the topics, and the discussion points that you and I will be having on the Sunday night show for the Sony Open. Any other thoughts heading into the season open on the tour?
We addressed a lot of controversial things on this pod in the last few weeks, and this one's going to be controversial, and our listeners are so dedicated, and I want to hear back on this one. I legitimately am curious. Is it okay to wear a hoodie on TV? Because you and I, as you can tell right now, that this is our uniform for the day. This is what we want to wear. This is what we're comfortable in. And a savvy person who watches us on TV will point out they're never wearing hoodies on TV. So I am curious of what our fans, what our folks who listen to this podcast religiously, dedicated, they would say about this. Because my argument is, in the modern age, if you get a big box of stuff, a big box of new Golf Channel stuff with a new logo on it, you can see it
for
right
instance,
there.
And there's, for example,
for instance, I'm just throwing this out there, and it doesn't have a hoodie in the box. Isn't that kind of weird? I'm just asking.
Yeah. And would you like us to wear it on golf today? For example, would it be weird if we were at a tournament and not wearing one here in Ponte Vedra? Rex, we got low temperatures in the 30s for essentially the next 10 days. I'm 38 years old. I wear a lot of hoodies. You're decidedly older. You wear a lot of hoodies. Is this something that offends you as a viewer? I think we'd love to hear.
You and I are flying to New York City on Sunday to do Golf Today, the shows next week. It is going to be freezing up there. Why in the world can't we wear hoodies?
Yeah, I'm really going to need to dig through my winter clothing, find the parka, find the down jacket, find the thermal underwear. It's going to be quite a scene. That's right. I'm sure we'll talk about that more on Sunday when we are in our respective rooms at the Courtyard in Stamford, Connecticut. But yes, Rex and I are co-hosting Golf Today together next week. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. As a reminder, you can find all of our news, notes, nuggets, features, columns, and the like all on golfchannel.com, which we launched late last year. In the meantime, have a great rest of your week. Enjoy the Sony Open. Rex and I will be back late Sunday night for a recap pod of the Sony Open. I believe coverage ends at 10 p.m. Eastern time. I'm going to have to take a nap midway through the afternoon just so I can power through that show. But if you miss the YouTube version, which we posted late Sunday night, again, made for TV edition, 9 a.m., 11 a.m. re-air Eastern time on Golf Channel. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Talk to you guys on Sunday.
They're just hoodies.